ready to keep you company wherever you are. Carte Blanche, the podcast, brings you immersive, hard-hitting stories anytime, anywhere, every week.
It's Monday, and you know what that means. Another jam-packed episode of The Whole Week Wrap with Daily Maverick and Carte Blanche. Joining us this week is Daily Maverick political journalist Queenen Maswabi. Here's what's coming your way. CADA deployment. What does it mean and who's benefiting? And is the DA really in a position to complain?
I don't think anything would come from it. I think it's a fight that the DA will lose. The other thing is that the DA has been called out by its former members to say they themselves implement CADA deployment.
Then AI saves the day as SARS uses tech to take back taxes. And the fight against HIV and AIDS gets a massive boost as a game-changing pilot project goes live. But first, arrests at last. A massive breakthrough in the AKA murder case gives us hope. Hello, Queenen. Welcome back to the show. How are you doing?
I'm great, Lizanne. I'm hoping that you're also good.
Thank you so much. So let's start things off with the latest breakthrough in the AKA murder case. Now, last week, 7 people were arrested and 5 of the 7 men were brought before court on charges relating to the murder of Keenan Forbes, popularly known as AKA, of course, and his former manager, Tebelo Tibs Motsoane. Were you surprised, like many South Africans, when you heard about the arrests?
Of course, I was surprised because I didn't anticipate it at all. Mm. At this point, you know, we've had the Senza Moyiwa case, which has been in court for many, many years, and there's been no major breakthrough. Instead, there have been a lot of delays in prosecuting those who are responsible for his death. Mm. So with high-profile cases like that, there's an expectation that the police and law enforcement generally will make more of an effort to make sure that, you know, the killers are found. But, you know, with the Senza Moyiwa case, I think that gave South Africans, you know, kind of a bleak view of our law enforcement. Also with the Thabo Bester case, I think there were a lot of questions around how Bester got away with so much under the eye of police, right? Mm. So there was an expectation probably from the public that nothing will come from it, as we've been waiting for more than a year for some kind of breakthrough and nothing was happening. And to find out that there was actually some movement around the case and that the police were working behind the scenes, I believe brings some kind of hope for South Africans mm-hmm. about our law enforcement. And also I think with, you know, so many fans across Africa, a lot of young people particularly are happy about this.
Definitely. And while the police didn't really reveal much about the case and what info they have confirmed that AKA was indeed the target of the hit. Police also said that the mastermind behind the hit has been arrested as well. Obviously, as with a lot of these high-profile cases, there's a lot of rumors going around. Some people are not convinced that the mastermind has indeed been arrested. One of the people who raised some doubts about this was, of course, AKA's dad, Tony Forbes. So it's going to be a very busy time for everyone, and I think it's going to be very important for everyone to distinguish between fact and rumor in the weeks and months to come. I have a feeling there might be more arrests on the way.
There might be, but as you said, they believe they have captured the mastermind, who's the coordinator of this apparent hit, 2 shooters, 2 spotters, and the organizer of firearms, which are the people who were on the ground actually looking to execute this hit. And you're right, there are a lot of conspiracy theories. We all need to be careful in the manner Definitely. In which we talk about it, because we don't want to be irresponsible and say it's the truth.
Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, when police kind of drag their feet in investigations, especially high-profile investigations, we've seen that with the Senzo case, we've seen that with the Thabo Bester case, it creates almost a perfect environment for these rumors to start spreading, because people want answers and they want accountability and they want closure. And if they don't get that, they start reaching for other things. But I'm happy that the police made arrests in this matter and that we will finally see some justice in this case that has really grabbed the world's attention. I mean, I saw the BBC reporting on the arrests. It's a global story that a lot of music fans are gravitating towards. Last week, the DA declared all-out war on CADA deployment. Having recently lost its case in the High Court to have the ANC's CADA deployment policy declared unconstitutional, the official opposition party is still determined to gain access to the ANC's policy documents and minutes relating to its CADA deployment committee. While the ruling party is yet to hand over these documents, the DA is already setting its sights on regional and provincial records. But why the big fuss? Queenen breaks it down for us. So onto our big and very meaty topic for this week, and it is, of course, CADA deployment. It's a big talking point. I've seen it being thrown around by a lot of people. Some, admittedly, they seem not to quite understand what CADA deployment means. So for some context for our listeners, the DA has been pushing hard for the ANC's CADA deployment policies to be declared unconstitutional. The term CADA deployment has been thrown around quite a lot as of late on social media and the comment sections. You know, whenever there's talk of any political maladministration, people just say, oh, it's CADA deployment, it's CADA deployment. But what does it actually mean?
In simple terms, it means that whichever political party is in charge of the administration will come in with their own set of experts and, you know, people they want to appoint to various positions within government, maybe state-owned entities as well. So the ANC has a program, or a subcommittee rather, where they decide on who should be appointed for different positions. How it works is that the head of the subcommittee on CADA deployment is usually the deputy president. Now, the DA's interest lies in the term when our current president, Cyril Ramaphosa, was the deputy president. So I think 2012 to 2017, those are the documents that they are after. And they want to see what considerations were made when certain appointments were made in government, and particularly whether they can implement the current president in any kind of state capture. So they want to prove that those who were not appointed on merit, but rather because they have a long relationship with the ANC, and this has propelled them to the positions that they have. I don't believe that it is uncharacteristic for any political party or government to implement CADA deployment, because I believe that the world over uses that system because you need people who are aligned with your vision to come into office with you and to ensure that whatever policies and principles you have outlined are carried out and are carried out by like-minded people. I think the DA has come up with obviously a lot of concerns around maybe those who have been at the helm at some state institutions and have had questions around it. And it's prompted them to believe that the ANC is just employing whoever they want just to make sure that they have their cadres, those who are aligned to them, and not necessarily those who have the expected and needed skill set to be heading up those institutions.
Yeah. What is the DA's end game here? Is this just electioneering? Will the publication of these records really have any consequence on a national scale? Why do you think they've chosen CADA deployment specifically as their focus?
So this has been an ongoing battle between ANC and the DA. It's nothing new. I think it's just that, you know, it coincides with the elections now, but it's something that DA MP Leon Schreiber has been putting up for like a couple of years now. This has been his project to expose maybe any indiscrepancies with how the ANC appoints its managers or leaders in state institutions, right? And I think the ultimate one is to implicate the president in state capture, to find evidence that some deployments were made because they were told maybe by certain people. So, for instance, those years are seen or dubbed as the nine wasted years that we constantly refer to when Jacob Zuma was still president of the country and the ANC, right? And because that was the so-called state capture era, they were trying to find out if in that time there was some kind of capture that led to certain appointments in state entities. Mm-hmm. So I believe that is the end goal. But also, it is playing politics. I don't believe that this was really a good name, the DA. I think maybe at the time they believed that, certainly because they thought they were going to find some kind of records from the ANC. But, you know, for me, even when they won the case and the ANC was given 5 working days to release the documents, I thought to myself, the ANC could start typing the so-called documents right at that moment.
Yes.
You can't prove that documents were typed now. There's no way for you to know. And also, what was funny to me was that the president had mentioned at the state capture inquiry that some of the documents had gone missing and they were trying to retrieve that. And then I'm sure you did see headlines around how one of the employees at Lutuli House, their computer crashed.
Yes.
And that's how they lost so many of the records, right? So for me, I believe it's a win in, you know, political sense, just winning political points. But I don't think it's an actual win for the DA itself because they didn't get anything from it. And I think a blow to the DA was losing their battle to have cadre deployment declared as unconstitutional. Mm. That completely did not work. Maybe also the DA needs to check itself before looking outwards. I don't think anything would come from it. I think it's a fight that the DA will lose. The other thing is that the DA has been called out by its former members to say they themselves implement cadre deployment. So they should be the last to be pointing fingers at other political parties for doing the same. And particularly Bongani Baloyi, who was the mayor of Midvale and once the youngest mayor, 26 years old, he was the one who spoke about how he had encountered cadre deployment in the DA and how all appointments for management at the municipality had to be approved by the federal executive. So, you know, it makes me think that this is purely just political. If it is that the DA itself would be comfortable with having someone who has a strong background in the ANC come in and get an administrative role in one of the municipalities they run, then it would be fair. But I don't think there's any political party that will do that. Unless it is that you are in a coalition and you're working together. But otherwise, I don't believe they themselves would do it. And other political parties have not really spoken out positively or endorsing what the DA is doing.
It's clear that artificial intelligence is here to stay. And while there's a fair amount to be concerned about, it's proving to be a valuable tool across many industries. Within the South African Revenue Service, AI has helped the organization recover hundreds of billions of rands in outstanding tax monies. A clear message from the taxman that you can run, but you can't hide. So let's move on to our next topic. And we've discussed artificial intelligence on the show before, and we specifically looked at the potential impact this very fast developing technology could have on our lives. Now, last week, the South African Revenue Service announced something really unexpected, and this surprised me as well. I must say, in terms of my 2024 bingo card, I did not have SARS uses AI to claw back billions. So when they announced that they were able to recover about 70 billion rands in tax revenue thanks to AI and several clever algorithms, honestly, I was caught by surprise by that. But also, that is a huge win for the country as a whole.
It is a huge win because when you go through the article written by my colleague Nisa Hartley, it shows that SARS is in so much debt. It's 300 billion rands in debt. So the need to recover funds is so high at the moment. And if AI is the direction that we need to be taking as a country to make sure that we get the funds, and if it's working as well as it is, I mean, the money recovered is quite impressive. then we should be steering that ship even harder and making sure that we use it to our advantage. I wanted to also just have a chat about how interesting the system is, because there's this debt propensity algorithm that they use, right?
Yes, yes.
And how they ensure they recover money is that they use the system to detect who owes money. And then if, let's say, the company is dormant, they won't pursue it. It shows which companies would be in the right position to pay the money back, which makes it way easier, because now you're not, you know, chasing every single person. You are chasing companies and individuals you can see are still making money and are likely to pay the money back.
Yes, exactly. I thought that was so clever in terms of just seeing our tax money is being put to good use. They invested about R1 billion in modernizing the way they monitor the tax income and potential tax evasion and tax fraud and all of that. So, I mean, it's amazing to see that R1 billion was put to good use. Some of the other figures listed in the article were just mind-boggling. I mean, through data science alone, they were able to identify questionable tax returns that resulted in R67 billion being recovered, another R9 billion from potential customs fraud. It is really encouraging to see that we are finally making progress in terms of clawing back those much needed tax monies from people who are evading taxes.
Yes. And also it just makes me laugh so much, because I think a lot of people believe that social media plays a huge role in the tax man knocking on your door and saying that you owe us money, because, you know, there are so many people who will post everything that they're buying. And there's always a joke on social media about I'm tagging SARS.
Yes. Yes.
Where are you getting this money from? Now I know exactly what kind of systems are in place. But I'm still saying those who are flaunting their wealth out there, just make sure you pay the tax man.
Yes, before you post your Maserati or your Lamborghini or your big mansion, make sure that you're in the clear with the tax man, please. Pre-exposure prophylaxis, or PrEP, for HIV prevention is nothing new. However, a new injectable form of PrEP, first introduced in the US in 2021, is now finally being made available in South Africa. It not only lowers the risk of HIV infection, but experts also believe the injection could assist in stamping out the stigma around HIV and AIDS. So on to our green shoot of the week, and it's an extremely important one within the health sector. In a massive step forward in the fight against HIV and AIDS, select members of the public will now be able to access the newly introduced HIV prevention injection, which is technically known as CABLA, or Long Acting Pre-Exposure Prophylaxis, or PrEP. Pick your acronym. It's been called a game changer by the United Nations, and now this pilot project has officially kicked off in South Africa. I think the focus is primarily on teenage girls and young women in South Africa, a demographic that has shown a disproportionately high rate of infection. This can very much be a game changer in the fight against HIV and AIDS.
Yes, Lizanne, and I think it's very important for us to highlight why particularly it's important for South Africa. Some people don't know that South Africa has one of the largest pandemics of HIV in the world. So this is quite important for our population. HIV and AIDS was first detected in the 80s in South Africa, and it really spread during that time, the 80s and 90s and early 2000s. So with having new drugs on the market that can assist people stay clear of the disease is a huge game changer. And I know that before, like, people were talking about taking PrEP quite casually, but now that we have something that we know can completely prevent the spread of HIV and AIDS is quite exciting. Also, what I wanted to highlight is that it's already been approved by SAHPRA.
Yes.
But there are some delays in making it official and getting it out there for people, for citizens, for South Africans, basically. And I believe that it should, we should speed up this process, because just like when we had COVID-19, because I realized how important it was for everyone to go out and get vaccinated. And I think we should treat it the same way. But I think that maybe we should relook how we handle it and make sure that everyone has access to it and make sure that South Africans know their options.
Yes, it's a pretty convenient option for those looking for that option, because it's not taken orally. It's injected, obviously, and it lasts for about 2 months. So the idea is that you get this injection up to 6 times per year. But the biggest hurdle to overcome at this point is, of course, the cost of the injection. There's obviously a lot of conversation around the patents of these injections and how they can make it more affordable and accessible for everyone in the country. Through these pilot projects, activists and government are able to then push for the official rollout of these life-saving drugs. Now, for anyone listening, if you're interested, you can, of course, learn more about the various PrEP pilot projects currently active across South Africa by visiting www.spotlightnsp.co.za. They also speak to experts about other HIV prevention options, including oral PrEP and the DPV ring, which is also being introduced to a lot of communities across the country. But that is it for our show today. Queenan, this has been a robust discussion, I must say, and I think your breakdown of the CADA deployment issue has certainly helped many of us better understand what it all means and maybe seeing a bit of the hypocrisy in all of it as well. So thank you so much for joining us, and I really hope to chat to you again very, very soon.
It was great chatting to you. Thanks, Lausanne.
And that's a wrap. Join us again next week as we unpack more local and international headlines. Until then, give Carte Blanche and Daily Maverick a like and follow on socials.